Hello, and thank you for listening. This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Beverly Friend. Hello, Beverly.
Hello, Tom.
And you are one of the premier theater reviewers here in Chicago.
On the A-list.
On the A-list. And tell us your background now, because you've been reviewing, and you were a college teacher, and you've got quite a varied background.
Well, I was teaching at Oakton Community College, journalism and English, and I went to see a play that the short story theater did at Royal George upstairs. And it was a play that they had adapted from Henry Mark Petrakis' stories. And I loved it.
I know Harry Mark Petrakis' story, a local Chicago writer.
Yeah, and I went home, and at 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and I just had this burning desire to write a review of Harry's. I had not written any reviews. This is more than 10 years ago. Had never written any reviews, but I just was burning to do it. And I liked Harry, and I wanted to do something for him. So I wrote this review, and I thought, what shall I do with it now? And I sent it out to the Herald. And because my paper, we used the same printer they did, the school paper.
It's the Daily Herald?
This is the Daily Herald, and they printed it.
Okay, that's great.
And I was very happy, and I thought nothing more of it. Although I said to them at the time, could I have sent it to more than one place? And they said, sure, we didn't pay you for it. You could have sent it anywhere. 2 years went by, and I went to see a play at the Meyer Kaplan Jewish Center, also short story theater, the same group from College of DuPage, who I'd not seen in the intervening years, doing a story by a man named Eremy Sternoff. And Eremy had smuggled out his biography written on cigarette papers from a camp, a concentration camp in Russia, and his wife had smuggled it out, and they'd made the book and the play from this, and it blew me away. And afterwards, I went over to the wife, and I said to her, my husband had been dead by that time, and I had someone translate to her, I know how you must feel. I, too, as a widow, would like to carry on my husband's work. And we talked for a moment. And I came home again. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I wrote the review of this play. This was in 1995. And this time, remembering what the Herald had said, that I could send it out, I sent it out to a bunch of places. And Lerner Papers called me and said, is it exclusive to us? And of course, it wasn't exclusive to them. And I said, no, but I didn't send it out to any of your direct competitors. I didn't send it to Pioneer, which was their direct competitor, ironically now working for Pioneer. And they offered me a job reviewing.
That's terrific. That's the back door for auditioning. But, of course, you have the background. You do have a PhD.
I have a PhD, but in English.
In English.
In English and in literature. And my journalism, well, I had written my doctoral dissertation on science fiction fandom. I had written a book, a textbook called Science Fiction, The Classroom in Orbit. So I had done this kind of thing. And I had written articles along the way, feature articles along the way, randomly. And
so, I mean, you were a professional writer.
But this was just, both of them were go to bed, wake up 4 in the morning. And for a long time, that was my pattern. And still, I often come in from
you,
a play. And
so your philosophy, and I do that. Sometimes you do have to sleep on a play.
Rarely.
Okay, usually you can do it right away.
Well, also, as I get older, I'm afraid I'm going to forget it. And the truth is, I do forget them. Someone will say to me, oh, I saw XYZ because you recommended it. Nothing. What the heck was XYZ? Mainly because the titles and the plays often have no relation to each other, and I don't remember what title went with what.
That's true. I have gone to plays telling people, I don't think I've seen it. Within the first 5 minutes, I remember the entire play because it's the title. Yeah.
So I like to write it while it's really fresh. And then my deadline is Monday morning.
Okay.
So I see a play between Wednesday and Sunday. So I can write anytime up to there. But if I have a Wednesday or Thursday, I let it sit till Sunday. If I have a Sunday play and have to write it for Monday, of course I do. But I like to have it sit and sort of brew and change words here and there. They very rarely do I hear from the editors. I don't hear from anybody. I write, and I send it in by email, and a check comes, and then I write, and I send it in by email. And every now and again, when Leia Zeldis was my editor, I had more feedback. Now with Michael Bonesteel, only rarely, although he loved the lead that I wrote on a play that I hated. So if you really plan something, he got a kick out of it.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Sometimes the most fun is when you have to pan a play.
Well, the ones that I remember most vividly, one of my early ones was on Hunting Cockroaches.
Hunting Cockroaches?
That's the name of the play.
That sounds like it's in trouble already.
All the characters came out from under the bed on the stage. But I remember that I wrote, while the characters on the stage were discussing the problems of insomnia, the 12 people in the audience had no trouble at all. But the one that Bone Steel liked was this production of The Doll's House, which they did at Museum of Contemporary Art, which I truly hated. And I said at that
time, I remember that show.
Yeah, I said, the only thing worse than seeing a nude male dwarf from behind would be if he would turn around. And that one, I got Bone Steel to say he liked that one. And I think that's the only comment he's ever made.
Okay, but now, just so people would know, that you generally like most theater
see. Well, people tell me that I generally write more positive reviews.
Yes, you do.
The point is, it's easy to write one you hate, easy to write one you love. It's the ones in the vast middle. When I was writing for Leia Zeldis, she would say to me, well, did you like it or did you hate it? Your obligation is to tell the reader, should he go or shouldn't he go? And that's what I keep in mind.
Yeah, let's get in that, in your philosophy, because I was taught that you're a combination of a consumer advocate of a reviewer, should people go and spend their time and their money, and also critiquing and evaluating the production and evaluating the art form.
Well, I was also, I remember someone saying that if you really trusted the movie critic or the theater critic, all they would have to write is yes or no, because you would know their philosophy and what they liked so well that you would then, that's all you would need to know. And I also feel that you bring with you whatever you are in terms of your own background, history, and experience. So that there's some plays I may well not be the right reviewer for.
But do you say that? Is it fair for a reviewer to say that your bias is up front?
Let's take Rent.
Okay.
I hated Rent.
And I agree.
I said so. I mean, I believe you should pay your rent and lead an honorable life and not blow off all this stuff. So it was. I thought it was immoral. Now, this may be my age speaking too. And I got two reactions. I got some people in their 20s who emailed me that I was stuck in the suburban housewife who didn't know what I was talking about. On the other hand, when I walked into Oakton Community College, senior citizens ran out to shake my hand and tell me how happy they were with what I had written because they felt the same way. So I know where I am and who I am, and I'm of course stuck from writing from this point of view.
Yeah, and I think after a while, you develop a following, and people know who you are and what you like and don't like, so they can put a sort of perspective.
Well, as I told you the story earlier, when my younger daughter was about 4 or 5, she went next door to see a movie at a neighbor's house. And she came back and told me it was about a movie. It was about a man who had something in his pocket. And everybody in the story wanted to know what he had in his pocket. And they ran after him, and they chased him, and they shot at him, but nobody found out what it was. And when I asked the neighbor, what movie did you see? They said, Bad Day at Black Rock. That's a movie where Spencer Tracy has one arm. He keeps his jacket sleeve in his pocket. You never see the sleeve out of the pocket. My little girl had made a story that fit that world from her world of experience. So we all bring to anything what we are at that time. And again, may like something at one age and not like it at another age, because we too have changed as we've gone along the way. I was talking today, Oakton's having a big Lear Fest coming up, and I was interviewed today also for Pioneer, and I remember saying to the lady, when she asked me why we were doing it, that a 17-year-old might not resound to Lear. But someone who's a senior citizen, who's worried about what he's going to leave his children, what his obligations are to adult children, what the obligations of the children are to him, would find this a more resonating experience. And it would be, and that's why the Emeritus Program has chosen to have 11 different things going on about Lear.
Yeah, let me throw a little plug for that. You were able to get to Michael Halberstam and Bob Falls
yes.
to come. Wow.
Michael Halberstam is our leadoff, and he's going to be doing,
he's from Writers Theater.
He's going to be doing Lear from an actor's point of view. And Robert Falls did this fantastic production.
Fantastic, yes.
And it's going to be question and answer, and I'm going to ask him, why did you do it as you did it? Where did you get the ideas from?
And that's coming up in August and September.
14th, August, I think from August 14th until September 20th, and it's 11 different things, $50 for the whole series. Go to as many or as few as you like. And there are 3 different film versions of Lear. The Orson Welles version leaves out the Gloucester story. The Peter Brooks
right?
version is supposed to be so dark and sinister that it's mind-boggling. Then we're going to talk about the Japanese version. We're going to talk about the Yiddish version. We're going to talk about the Russian version, all of which, is another world. And what I wanted to do, they turned me down on. This was a great idea. This is the best idea of all times. I wanted to do Lear, followed by a session on estate planning.
And that's cool. They turned you down on that.
They turned me down on that one because they said that most of our senior citizens were so sophisticated, they had already planned their estates. And they had never been able to fill a class.
But you and I both know that's not true.
I just thought estate planning was such a natural development from Lear. How should you divide the package? You know that I want.
You just have an unbounding amount of energy, don't you?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah. So as much of a theater person as you are, and a theater fanatic, that's not totally what you're about. That's
no,
a small segment, right?
No, the truth is, Tom. For you, theater is really your life. You see 300 plays a year.
Yeah.
For me, it's a hobby. I see 50 plays a year. But meanwhile, I'm teaching classes. I'm giving lectures.
You started out as a teacher.
And
you and your husband.
And with a love of science fiction, because that's where my dissertation is.
On science fiction.
On science fiction fans, on the people who read science fiction.
Well, my research shows that you're considered one of the experts in science fiction.
I used to tell them I'm probably the expert in Lincolnwood. But beyond that,
in Lincolnwood, huh? Okay. Right. Well, let's go back to reviewing now.
Reviewing.
Are you a believer in putting ratings on your reviews? Like stars or highly recommended?
No, we don't, but I would like to. I think it would be a good idea because it gives a person immediately an idea, should I bother?
So you're a believer that we should label them? Because there's two valid ideas. I'm a believer of that also.
Yeah, Pioneer doesn't label, and I haven't ever really pushed for it. Although I wanted to have something called a capsule comment. Whereas every time I walk out of a play, I try to think, what one word could I use to sum up this play? So for a while with Leah as my editor, I would give the word, and she would often use it in the headline.
Okay. But she wrote the headline, as a lot of papers do.
Well, as I teach my students, the writer of an article is never the writer of a headline because you don't know the space it needs to fill. But so I would like the idea of a capsule comment, you know, just like presumptuous.
All right, let me throw one at you since we both saw it and we talked about it in our review segment, High School Musical.
Puerile.
Okay. I'd call it mediocre. All right.
And Joe? Oh, God, Joe.
Yeah, what's one word?
Oh, no. Well, no, the one Joe. And then Pajama Men, which I really, really hated.
Okay.
You know, go back to bed.
Go back to pajama, okay. So, all right, so you believe in ratings.
Yes.
And do you believe that you're writing not for the theater people or to critique the play, like for theater magazine. You're writing for consumers.
I'm writing for consumers, although occasionally you have a moment. I never forget. I was seeing. I don't remember. It was a play about. I'm trying to think. It was a story. Brer Rabbit, the Brer Rabbit story. I can't think of the name, but it's been banned. It's no longer shown in the movies. Because it was not politically correct.
Okay.
In any case, it was a play that was you can no longer see that play. That movie.
Because it's politically incorrect.
Politically incorrect.
Okay.
And I was seeing, they were talking about the man, Joel Chandler Harris.
Okay.
And they were talking about Disney, and they were talking about early Disney movies, and they were talking about these things. And afterwards in the discussion, they told the information that this particular work had been banned. And I said, that should be in your program. That's an essential piece of information when you're printing the program. It makes a difference in seeing this play to know that,
yes.
that historically this was, and they changed their program. So every now and then you get this sense of, yes, I saw something that it wasn't the play, but it improved the play to know the historic fact.
Okay.
So sometimes you feel that, you know, that you could tell them, or things like, for the point of view of a reviewer, if you're printing out these programs, even if you have very little money, put little pictures of the people in. It doesn't cost a lot to put pictures of the cast.
I cannot agree with you more. There's nothing worse. In fact, with Photoshop and all these programs on the internet, it's very simple to do. You put the, it's not like it was in printing years ago and you had to make it into the dots, right? Because I go to storefronts, you and I go to storefronts, and there'll be 10 or 12 people in the cast, and you don't know who's who. They're not wearing their nameplates, you know.
Should I tell you my worst error in reviewing ever?
Oh, well, since we're talking, sure, go ahead.
This is really embarrassing. I saw a play at the Neo Futurists.
Neo-futurist, all okay.
Right. I saw a play about a girl who was kind of an ugly duckling, and she then took off her glasses and became more beautiful. The typical story of this.
Okay.
All right, and I enjoyed it. But the girl made such a dramatic change that I thought maybe it was a different actress. But you know, with women, you can put on a wig, you can put on high heels, you could change a lot. So I looked at the program and I looked around, and there was no other person listed. So in my review, I wrote, she was so brilliant, you almost thought it was another actress doing it. The next day, I saw the Chicago Tribune review. Mike came out, and I saw the Tribune, and the Tribune said there were two different actresses.
Oh.
And I was horrified. I called my editor, and she said, well, check it out. And I called the theater. Yes, they had put another actress in. They had not listed in the program because they wanted to fool everybody. And the other actress had been behind the county candy counter for the whole first act selling candy, and they just switched the two girls. So then I wrote, I went back and I was able to change it for, we come out Thursday, Wednesday and Thursday, I was able to change it. And then I wrote a correction. And the correction was, instead of saying, she was so great, I almost thought it was two girls. I wrote, it was so great, I almost thought it was two girls. And it was.
Okay.
And then I was teaching reviewing at the time. So I brought this whole thing in to show my class how easy it is to make an error, how important it is to check, how embarrassed I was. And then my best friend was in town, and she said, no, you weren't wrong. The theater was. They should have let people know by putting the name in the cast. They should not have fooled everyone.
I agree with that. What do you think?
But I was, all I know is I was totally fooled and totally embarrassed, and I corrected it, but it was like, ah.
That's interesting. But you say, see, you knew how to get to that.
Well, I didn't fudge it. I mean, I went totally letter immediately. I think I made a really big mistake.
Yeah, I hate when in programs or in the press information they give us, there isn't enough, and you in it mistakenly put the wrong actor, you know, playing the wrong part. And I think a lot of that, and we watch pretty close and take notes and make little, you know.
I try so hard, but truly my kindergarten teacher said about me something that's really true. She said, more speed than accuracy. And I want to put that on my tombstone, but my daughter said I can't because people will think I drove into a tree.
Very good. Very good. So let's, so you believe that one of the roles of a theater reviewer, and the main role is to be a consumer.
Should you go to see the play?
Yeah.
And you have to then know who I am too. And there's some plays, I mean, I don't think I should review plays necessarily about the blues, about jazz music, about certain things that I'm really not familiar with.
Okay.
You know, that.
But can't you go into a sort of a reporter's mode?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And you do the best you can.
Yeah.
But you know, people also ask me, how do I pick a play to review? So you see them all, but I have a weekly paper.
Yeah.
And
I'm
going to give the secret away.
Okay.
Number one, as I hold the press release in my hand, I look at when the play ends. Because, hey, I'm a weekly paper. If it's going to be only a play for 2 weeks or for 3 days, there's no point even trying for it.
Yeah, that's true, because you don't want to have the review come out and the play's already closed.
If I come out Wednesday and the play closes Saturday.
So your first criteria is how long the run is.
How long the run is. Second criteria is what day of the week does the play open? We're a Monday deadline. Pioneer wants the play to be reviewed the first week it shows,
okay.
Not the second week. Very rarely, if things are really slow. But so I look, it must open for me between Wednesday and Sunday. So if it opens on Monday or Tuesday, even if it's the world's greatest play, I don't review it. Now, I complained about this.
That's kind of putting you in a box because...
Because some,
you know,
of the great stuff opens,
well,
on Mondays.
Well, the Goodman opens Sundays or Mondays.
So then I got permission. Once a month I can do a play that opens on Monday, but the review only appears online and not in the paper. I don't think anybody in this world reads it. Now, somebody else said to me, I think Jonathan Abarbanel said, take the money and run. But the less, I want to be read, so
yes.
I don't tend to do this. Occasionally a theater will let me.
Well, unfortunately, the Pioneer Press, it's hard to find their reviews on their website.
Oh, well, it's
but
even
hopefully they will get better.
It's even harder when it's not in the paper and nobody knows it's there.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so going on with your philosophy of reviewing, how much do you think you should...
Oh, the plot?
You want to give enough of the information about the play to get them to go see it. Because I've often been told, we appreciate, we didn't agree with you, but you gave us enough information. so that we saw it and we thought it was good. Let's say a play I didn't like.
Well, the thing is, you know, not to give too – how much is enough and how much is too much, and that's a real problem.
Yeah.
You know,
and some – I know some reviewers in town that give away the farm.
Well, I know that too. And some say, like Roger Ebert used to say, a spoiler's coming up. And this is the kind of conversation I have when I take a grandchild, because I'll write the review and then the grandchild will read it and we'll say, why did you say this and not that? Why didn't you tell this part of the story? And then we sit and say, well, what is enough and what is too much?
Yeah. You should give them enough to get them tweak their interest so they know the genre, they know the era, they know generally what's happened, but you can't give away the play. I don't think that's
and,
right.
And then again, you're also supposed to be looking at other things. How well does the director handle it? Is there good choreography? What about the staging? Is it well done? Is it such a brilliant production that it doesn't matter if they stage it in a bare room?
That's true.
Acting so terrific?
And as I've learned from Hedy Weiss, that in terms of musicals, you have to talk about choreography, lighting, costume, the technical lens of theater can really make a difference.
I'm glad you mentioned Hedy, because one of the most wonderful things is writing a review and then seeing what the other reviewers have said about the same play. Most of the time, it's a consensus. Every now and then, there's really a variation in opinion. I used to take those in to teach to my classes. When Vagina Monologues came out, Lucia Morrow liked it very much, and Hedy Weiss hated it, and I was somewhere in the middle. And it was wonderful to Xerox this off and sit in the class and discuss, you know. And they could take the same scene and talk about the same scene, and one love it and one hate it, and that was intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how true that is.
It's very much a learning experience to read the other reviewers.
Yeah, I agree, but I think you would agree with me. The best philosophy for a young reviewer to do is obviously you write your own first. You should never read anyone's.
Write your own first, and then take a good hard look at what the other ones wrote.
Yeah, and then when you make a good point, and you see that, you know, people like Hedy and Chris Jones, then you start getting a little reinforcement. Hey, maybe I'm starting to catch on to this thing, or at least we all had the same vision. But I agree with you on that. What do you think the influence should be for a reviewer? I know in New York, there's a couple of reviewers, if they pan your show, you're dead. But thank God in Chicago, I don't believe anybody totally has the power, you know, one or two. Cumulatively, maybe.
No. The truth is, I mean, no matter what I say, I can't hurt High School Musical.
No, it's bulletproof. That's
true. And I can't hurt some of them. However, something in the basement of a church, I can do in. Or on the other, conversely, I did one, of, I think, for St. Sebastian, and they wrote me and said, after I praised it, they were sold out for the rest of the run. So when you're hitting the small theaters, have an obligation to be very careful, because you're not trying to do someone in. Although I saw one play, I was supposed to see two one-act plays, and the first one-act play was so terrible that I went to the playwright and I said, the best thing I could do for you is not write about your play. And I gave him back the thing because I didn't want to say all the terrible things I was thinking.
Well, that's fair.
But mainly, I said, you try not to look for what's positive and what people would enjoy seeing.
I agree. Because that's what people who read reviews are interested in theater, right? So that's my pet peeve in life is reviewers who go and they hate everything. You kind of wonder why they even review.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you basically, and you're a lover of theater as I am. But
you also have idiosyncratic editors. I had one editor who didn't really want you to mention other plays by the same author. Another editor does. I had one editor where if I put in the amount of money, $20, if I put in $10 for seniors, took that out. And another editor wants that information. So you are also writing for the editor. I'm aware if I have an editor with any odd quirks, liking any particular thing, I'm aware of that. And sometimes I may be aware of it and try to sneak something in. And then it's very interesting to see if they cut something out. What did they cut out?
Yeah.
But I very rarely get edited.
All right. Well, that's good. Now, in closing, what advice would you give to a young writer, young theater person who wants to get in reviewing?
You know, it's so hard because so many jobs one falls into instead of really seeking out.
That's true. But let's say they have their heart set on it and they took courses and they had...
Well, see a lot of plays.
Okay.
Well, I would say go see a play, go home and write up the review, and then start comparing it. Compare it here, compare it with the reviewers in New York if the play was there. See what they did that you didn't do or what you're doing that they didn't do. And then go in, you know, journalism professors are very accessible, and editors are very accessible. Go in and talk to a professional. Say, can I talk to you? Can I show you my writing? Would you help me with this? Look for a mentor.
That's good. Very good. And then, of course, what you did wouldn't hurt either. Send it around to some of the the papers.
Well, you have. I think it was Robert Heinlein who said, you know, if you're writing something and it sits in your drawer, it's worthless. Send it out.
Yeah, and see what happens. Well,
but let me also say,
okay,
don't quit your day job. This is not a high-paying profession.
That's for sure. There's only a few people that really can make a living at it. At the major papers.
But even so, I think there's easier ways to make big bucks.
Yeah, but you got to do it because you love it, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Beverly, so much. This has been a terrific interview. And, folks, thank you for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.